Morning everyone and welcome to the webinar. My name is Matt Newing, one of the account managers here at Canada Life, and I'm joined today by my colleagues Neil Jones, our marketing technical manager, and Deborah Bond, our head of sales. This morning's webinar focuses on unlocking the full investment potential of international bonds and an introduction to the segregated portfolio service. Before we get started, just a few quick housekeeping items to cover off. For those listening live, CPD certificates will be emailed across to you within 48 hours. Unfortunately, CPD is not available to those listening on the recording of the webinar or via the podcast service. A recording of the webinar will be uploaded to the website within 48 hours. Please do raise any questions you have using the chat box facility on the screen, and we'll try and answer as many of these questions as possible at the end of the webinar. Copies of the slides plus any relevant handouts and sales aids can be downloaded from the control panel on your screen. So I'll now hand over to Neil, who will cover international investment bonds and the Dublin jurisdiction. Neil.
Thanks very much, Matt. Yeah, good morning, everybody. Yeah, so what we're going to run through today, as Matt said, is we'll look at the benefits of using a provider domiciled in Ireland. That relates, as far as Canada Life is concerned, to our Premier Europe account, which is through our Irish company, Canada Life International Assurance. So we'll cover off some of the product features that are available, and then we'll summarise everything at the end. And obviously, the product features will include the segregated portfolio service. So if we start to look at Ireland as a jurisdiction in itself, it's a very strong economy. It has very good rankings as far as the IMF and the World Bank goes, certainly better than the UK in 2016, and those figures are reflected in 2017's estimates and actuals as well. The top corporation tax rate in Ireland is 12.5%, which makes it very attractive for companies as well as product providers. There are also numerous companies that have their European and regional offices based in Ireland, which again helps the economy and makes it very strong. As far as providers are concerned, they're regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland, and that has certain limitations or certain requirements regarding the money that the policy provider holds, and that ring fencing policyholders' funds separate from shareholders' funds. As an EU destination, it's subject to similar legislation to the UK, so they do have Solvency II requirements in Ireland, so it should be very familiar as far as strength of provider goes. So it has the same three pillars about quantitative, qualitative and market disciplines regarding reporting and capital requirements. Although there's no formal compensation scheme in Ireland, there is an understanding that if an Irish provider gets into financial difficulty and is unable to meet its liabilities, that the UK Financial Services Compensation Scheme will kick in and will provide protection for the clients. This is an area that's mentioned in the FCA COBS rules. So if there is any difficulties, then that should apply, providing that the policy has been recommended by a UK advisor to a client who's habitually resident in the UK. Similar to other jurisdictions, there is an ombudsman scheme in place. So if anybody has any issues with providers based in Ireland, then they can write to the Irish ombudsman scheme. And finally, like the UK, there is also an insurability or insurable interest requirement when writing life assurance policies. Many providers, such as ourselves, don't really have an insurable interest requirement, because what we do is we write the clause of the contract relating to insurable interest is written under Manx legislation, where in the Isle of Man there is no insurable interest requirement, so therefore that's not an issue when you're using the Premier Europe account and some of the international bonds available from competitors. So before we get on to things, let's just remind ourselves about the tax advantages of using an Irish bond or a bond from an Irish provider. There is no local tax in the underlying investments where the resident is outside of Ireland. So that's why it's very attractive for UK residents, because there is no tax, so it's similar to the Isle of Man. There may be withholding tax on some investments that are held if they're non-UK. Obviously, the UK did away with the withholding tax on dividend income a couple of years ago, but there may be some assets that could be based around the world where they're are withholding taxes, and there's no credit given for those. So if you're using some weird and wonderful investments, you need to bear that in mind. And then there's also the advantage of discretionary fund manager fees. So when looking at appointing a discretionary fund manager, using an Irish provider allows for no VAT on those discretionary fund manager fees or the fees that the DFM will charge. This is due to the Irish Revenue Commissioner's interpretation of the EU legislation regarding special investment funds, and it's different to HMRCs, which is why it's not available through other jurisdictions. So it just means that potentially when using a DFM, you can save sort of the 20% VAT on their fees, which isn't going to be a great deal of money, but it is going to make a difference and can make it more attractive. So thinking about policyholder taxation, it's going to be similar to other investment bonds from other jurisdictions because the legislation that applies is UK legislation. So you'll have the chargeable events that will occur on death, assignment, maturity, or on surrender, or the one for excess withdrawals where somebody takes over the 5%. So it is an investment bond that is subject to similar legislation as other investment bonds, whether they be written through a UK provider or an Isle of Man provider. And likewise, you'll have similar chargeable gain calculations. So again, on maturity, death or surrender, there's the formula looking at what goes into the bond to what comes out. So where you take the surrender value and any withdrawals, and you can deduct off that the investment amount and any excess withdrawals which have already been assessed. And then if there's an excess withdrawal over the 5% allowance, then the whole amount is a chargeable gain. So you should be familiar with that, but it is similar to other investment bonds because it's UK tax legislation. Now, looking at the order of taxation, it fits in where other international bonds fit in. So when you're looking at a client's tax calculation, the first thing that goes into the equation is their non-savings, non-dividend income. So any self-employed income, any earnings that they may have, pension income. And then after that comes savings income. So any interest payments that they may get from bank deposits, for example, and any gains from international bonds also fit in there. And then after that comes dividend income and onshore bond gains. And then obviously when you have a gain, it's added to the client's other income. And then that decides what rate of tax they pay, either 0%, 20, 40 or 45. And if they go from 20 to 40 or 40 to 45, then they can use top slicing relief, which you can under investment bonds. Again, that's UK legislation. So if we have a look at an example about how savings income works when you have international bond gains. So if you have a client who has a chargeable gain on an investment bond that falls into the personal allowance or the starting rate band of £5,000, then effectively that's taxed at 0% because it's all savings income, and therefore potentially an investor can have a chargeable gain of what is now £17,850 by the time you take into account personal savings allowance and the starting band. In our example, if we now have a client who has a small amount of income, maybe from a pension or some self-employed income, and then has a similar size chargeable gain, it still sits within the personal allowance and the starting rate bands, so the earnings are taxed at 0%, and the chargeable gain is again taxed at zero because it all fits within the zero tax bands. Then somebody who has a little bit more income with a similar size chargeable gain, again, that income is taxed at 0% because it sits within their personal allowance. The majority of the chargeable gain sits within the remainder of the personal allowance and the starting rate band. And then small amount goes into the basic rate band, but they can offset that against the personal savings allowance, which is going to be £1,000 for anybody who's below higher rate tax. If they go above higher rate tax, and that reduces down to £500, and then additional rate taxpayers lose that altogether. Then another client with a lot more income, so obviously they've used up their personal allowance and part of it falls within this, what would be the starting rate band. So they have a 0% on the amount that falls in their personal allowance and 20% on the amount that falls over that amount. And then you have the chargeable gain sits on top. And again, that's taxed at 0% up to the end of the starting rate band, 20% on the excess that falls into the basic rate band. But again, they get to use the personal savings allowance. Now, if you had that where they go into additional rate tax, again, you could use top slicing relief to reduce down the gain. So that's just a brief look at the tax position for international bonds and Irish provided bonds. But if we have a look at the Premier Europe account, which is Canada Life's bond, that's, as I say, offered by Canada Life International Assurance, which is our Irish company. We also have our Premier account, which is available through the Isle of Man, and they're similar products, just with different jurisdictions. But there is one particular feature which we'll go into in a bit more detail. But both are available on life assurance and capital redemption basis. both have similar amount of segmentation, which we'll come on to, and similar investment flexibility, although Ireland does have the segregated portfolio service. Both allow full range of advisor charging options, whether it be initial, ad hoc, or ongoing. We also do fund advisor fees. So where there's a fund advisor involved, they can have their fees taken out as a policy fee within the contract. We accept in specie transfers. We've got the full range of trusts that are available, different charging options, and a maximum age of 89 on the contract. So looking back at last year, we did enhance the Premier account and the Premier Europe account. We reduced the minimum investment from 100,000 down to 50. We now have a streamlined service. So if somebody wants to do recurring single premiums to make it look like a regular premium investment, we can do that. And also there's no minimum policy size on the segments. So what we did is we increased the segments to 99,999 as a maximum. But as a default on new applications, we pick 12,000 unless we're asked to do anything different. And then we've got the investment flexibility where we've got a range of funds, platforms and discretionary managers, as well as a segregated portfolio service, which is only available under the Premier Europe. And they're the two areas which we're just going to have a quick look at in a bit more detail now. So thinking about the increased segmentation, if we take a couple of clients, Joe and Sarah, and they want to invest £300,000 for their children and use that money for education fees later on, we'll assume a 4% growth rate. And we'll just demonstrate that the effect of having a greater segmentation means that they can take out more money from the policy without actually having any tax liability. So the money's been invested in Sarah's name and she doesn't have any other income. So she's got her full personal allowance, starting rate band and personal savings allowance to use, which means that she can have a gain of 17,850 before she starts paying any tax. So if we have a look at a £300,000 investment, if we take a policy that's, say, got 10 segments, if we assume that 4% net growth rate, so a segment size in 15 years' time is going to be just over £54,000 with a gain of 24,000. So if she surrenders one of those segments, she's going to have a tax liability. So there's no tax-free encashment value there, because as soon as she surrenders one segment, you've got a gain of about £7,000, which she then needs to be assessed for. If we use greater segmentation by looking at a policy that does 100, segment size is going to be just over £5,400. And that means that somebody can surrender up to £37,000 before they start paying or paying any tax, because the gain on that will still be within the £17,850. Opening it up again to 1,000 segments, well, they can take a little bit more money, so they can actually get nearly £40,000 out of the investment before they start paying tax, before they start making the gain go over the allowances. And if you have the maximum segmentation of 99,999, you can see it's over £40,000 that they can take out. So this is just using the client's £17,850 allowances. You can see that they can get more out. And if they do that over, say, a five-year period, they can actually realise more money from the investment through the greater segmentation than they can from policies that may restrict that number down. So very, very flexible, and it allows people to pinpoint exactly what gain they want to make use of tax allowances or to arrive at a specific amount that they want to get out of the investment. So moving on and looking at the investment options. When a client invests money into an investment bond or the Premier Europe account, the money goes to Canada Life International, and then that money is then invested. Now, essentially, the money goes into investment funds because they're the permissible assets that are used. It is possible for the investor to nominate a platform, maybe, that the IFA and they can use, and they will invest through that into the same or similar range of investment funds. If they wanted to appoint an investment manager, whether on a discretionary basis or not, or as a custodian, they can pass the money to the investment manager. They might use a platform, or they might go directly into the funds themselves. So it allows different ways to get into those investment funds. But the important thing to remember is the assets that are held in that bond are actually owned by Canada Life International, and the client gives the money to the provider or to us, and then we invest that money and just allocate part of our fund to their policy. So looking at the investment options that are available, investment platforms across the Premier Europe and the Premier account, we've got about 50 or so investment platforms that we link to, which you as advisors can recommend for your clients and can use. Investment funds, you can go into virtually any permissible investment from anywhere around the world. So there's thousands available. So there isn't actually a fund list. This is true open architecture. So if you've got any questions around specific funds that may be unusual, then we have a governance team that will look into that for you. And then you've also got investment managers where people can appoint those as custodians. And we've got about 150 arrangements in place. And that leads us on to what is the segregated portfolio service. And I'll pass over to my colleague, Deb, who can go through and explain a bit more detail around the segregated service.
Okay, thank Deb. You, Neil. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the segregated portfolio service, and I will be referring to it as its acronym of SPS for the remainder of the presentation. So I'm just going to have a little look at a high level overview before I go into the detail of SPS. So it is an investment option that is available through our Premier Europe account, but just available through a select group of discretionary fund managers that we have a specific agreement in place with. What it does allow is access to a much wider range of investments than we would normally see within an international bond. So what it specifically gives access to is direct equities, bonds and gilts. And that's what we would mainly see being invested in through the SPS service. It does not breach the permissibility rules. Discussions have taken place between HMRC and our advisors to confirm this point. And I will go into a little bit more detail about the legislation so you can see those permissibility rules. It's available to both new and existing policy holders. So the SPS can be taken out at the time a new bond is put into force, but also existing policy holders that have both our Premier Europe account or our international portfolio bond are able to switch into the segregated portfolio service, either from an existing discretionary fund manager arrangement that they may want to switch out of, or out of other assets or a platform solution. So policyholders that no longer require that service can switch out back into wholly permissible assets to avoid triggering a tax charge. And that's by virtue of the fact that this is just an investment option available under the Premier Europe account rather than a separate product. Neil mentioned earlier, by virtue of the fact that our Premier Europe account is based in Dublin, then the DFM fees are VAT exempt, giving it another advantage. So let's have a little look about the legislation that enables us to offer SPS. So before 1998, international portfolio bonds were truly unfettered. They were just limited by the life assurance company's own investment restrictions. However, HMRC was concerned about the use of international bonds. So what they sought to restrict was certain activities, such as holding private company shares within an international bond. So what that led to was the introduction of the rules on permissibility. So if anybody wants to look at this specific legislation that talks about those permissibility rules and means that we are able to offer SPS, it was effectively the UK statutory instrument 1999/1029 that actually allows this, but there's also further guidance in the Insurance Policyholder Taxation Manual 7700, and also there's further guidance in the Income Tax Trading and Other Income Act of 2005, if anybody does want to go and have a look at what that legislation actually says. Now, we all know that breach of the rules of permissibility means that there is a deemed annual gain for the policyholder of 15%, irrespective of whether a gain or a loss has been made on the portfolio. Let's just have a little look at more detail at those actual rules then. So what that said is if the policyholder or their professional advisor can select their portfolio content or influence its selection, then the investment universe must be limited to what I suppose we already know and love in terms of what's permissible in international bonds, so authorised UK unit trusts and investment trusts, collective investment schemes, as defined by the Financial Services and Markets Act 2000, linked life funds and cash stroke deposits is what we would traditionally see within an international bond. However, what that legislation also says is if the policyholder or their professional advisor cannot influence the asset selection, then the investment universe expands to other asset types allowable under the guidelines of the Central Bank of Ireland, in this case, subject to our own restrictions on acceptable asset links. So that means that it includes, but it's not limited to, UK equities, global equities, UK gilts, government and corporate bonds, euro bonds, some structured products, but subject to our own regulations and those set out by our authorising body. What we do generally see, though, within SPS mandates is the access to direct equities and bonds. So that would be what we would have made, our experience has mainly been of those investments that our DFM partners would invest in. So this is just an investment option with a difference, as I've already alluded to. It's available within our Premier Europe account. And some of those advantages that it offers to clients is that, firstly, it's available to new and existing policyholders, providing that the existing policyholders have either a Premier Europe account or an international portfolio bond. Much wider investment universe is available, but also there's the possibility for significantly lower charges on the underlying portfolio that the investment manager would put into place. We'll have a look at what difference that could make in a few moments. There's also then the potential for income or liability driven portfolios. So one of the things that we do see is in connection with discounted gift schemes. SPS and discounted gift schemes do seem to be quite a good match, because within a discounted gift scheme, the client has to take income. There isn't any option there. So the fact that the investment manager is able to put a portfolio together which includes income producing assets such as gilts or bonds makes this quite popular and quite a good match. Also then there's the potential for the bond portfolio to align with the in-house investment approaches, so that the investment manager is unrestricted to a certain extent in the portfolio that is put together. He doesn't necessarily have to deviate from the portfolio that would be put together outside of an international bond. You can also add extra value to you as an advisor to your service. It could differentiate you from the competition, because it is something that is, I suppose, not talked about or not commonly known that this is something that is available. And there are quite clearly advantages to the client, not only in terms of the overall cost saving that could be available. What it also does is it reduces the risk of holding those non-permissible assets. So in terms of the investment manager, they are able to put together the portfolio in line with what a portfolio might look like in an unwrapped world, without having to concern themselves with the risk of buying a non-permissible asset. The risk instead is that it could be proved that the advisor and or the client has had influence over the asset selection. So if that were to be proved, that is when the bond would be deemed to be a personal portfolio bond and therefore taxed as such. So the risk is slightly different, but it enables the investment manager to carry on and putting their portfolios together in line with their strengths and their in-house approaches. Okay, that's not to say, I talked about the risk of the influence. What I will cover in a moment is in terms of the procedure that we have to follow to ensure that the discretionary fund managers that we are partnering with have the necessary compliance procedures in place to ensure that risk is not there. In terms of trust investments, because the SPS is just another investment option, it can be used with any trust that is able to hold a Premier Europe account. So gift trust, gift and loan trust, the discounted gift, as I've already mentioned, excluded property trust, probate trusts, or even existing trusts where an investment bond is suitable. So are there any restrictions? I think I mentioned earlier that we do have a panel of discretionary fund managers who are able to operate an SPS mandate. So there are only certain discretionary managers where this agreement is in place, because they must have the appropriate compliant procedures to ensure that there is no influence from either the client or the advisor. And also, 100% of the bond assets must be in an SPS portfolio, so that you couldn't have an international bond which 50% of the assets were held in an SPS portfolio and 50% were held on another platform. So it's either the bond is all segregated portfolio service or a standard discretionary mandate. One thing that is acceptable, it is possible to have two SPS partners within the same bond, provided they are both operating the segregated portfolio mandate. It says 100% of the bond assets there. That's 100% of the invested assets, because we would still need to see that there was money left in the transaction account to cover any charges or withdrawals. Okay, so I mentioned earlier about the potential for reduced ongoing charges. So how much would this actually be worth? Obviously, then there is less drag on the investment performance. So I've taken an example on a £1 million investment and assumed a 5% net growth rate. You'll see then there are three figures there based on a saving of 20 basis points, 50 basis points, or 70 basis points. I'll just take the middle column there. So if we look at the underlying portfolio, making a saving then of 50 basis points per annum, how much is that actually worth? After 10 years, you will see there that that is worth an extra £79,250. Now that is not an insignificant amount. And if we look a little bit further and are a little bit ambitious with the growth rate and look at a 7% growth rate instead, you'll see there that on a 50 basis points saving after 10 years, that could be £93,880. And these, the saving of 50 basis points are figures that some of the investment managers have said to us, if we were putting together a portfolio that had to hold the traditional permissible assets of an international bond, this is what the underlying charge, portfolio charge, would be. However, if we were unrestricted and able to put bonds, gilts and equities into the portfolio, this would be the charge. So these aren't figures that we've just plucked from the air. They are figures that some of our discretionary fund managers have said could be the overall saving. Okay, so in terms of the bespoke agreement that is needed for accessing the segregated portfolio service, we would have to have a standard agreement in place with the discretionary fund manager first, so we're able to send money from international bonds to that discretionary fund manager for them to invest. But the segregated portfolio service is another agreement that sits alongside that. So there are processes in place to make sure that the client and their advisor cannot influence that portfolio content. And the investment manager has to have a clear audit trail to demonstrate that that is in place. So some of the things there, the client and their financial advisor, they must give any requests to alter their risk profile through us, so our Dublin company, and any request to sell their segregated portfolio service, again, to Dublin. And they agree, so there is a separate agreement that is put in place at the start that both the client and the advisor, and indeed the investment manager, all sign to show that there will be no influence over the portfolio content. The client and their financial advisor shouldn't instruct or appoint the investment manager directly. So the forms and the paperwork, none should be submitted directly to the investment manager. That would go via us. Now, I often get asked, can the investment manager and the client still meet for briefings? Yes, we're not saying there must actually be no contact at all, but be fully expected that the investment manager and the client and indeed the advisor would still be meeting for briefings. And the investment manager can also be running other assets for that same client that would sit outside of the international bond. We will provide the investment manager with sufficient information to run the portfolio within the client's risk or income requirements in a format that whatever that investment manager is familiar with. So in terms of the normal risk questionnaire, that is still provided to the investment manager. And the portfolios can still have some wider general principles, such as socially responsible or ethical mandates. The concern would be here that the mandate could be directing the investment manager to too few assets to or stocks to choose from. But where it's a much wider principle and there's still enough stocks for the investment manager to be deciding on or investing in, then that would be acceptable. So how does this actually work in practice? What is the process for recommending or advising the SPS? So the client and advisor would agree that the Premier Europe account and segregated portfolio service are suitable for that client. And the advisor in discussions with the client then would be selecting which investment manager would be used. The client completes the application form and the segregated portfolio service investment manager appointment form. So there is an additional form for the advisor and the client to complete, and that is the form that I mentioned earlier that has to be signed by the investment manager, the advisor, and the client, where they're agreeing not to influence the portfolio content. The Premier Europe application is processed, and we then appoint the investment manager to the Premier Europe account, and the investment manager then manages the assets in accordance with the agreed mandate and in accordance with the risk profile. The investment manager would then send communications on the portfolio to Canada Life, and we forward that information to the advisor and or the client.
Okay, thank you very much for that overview, Deb, and I'll quickly summarise Neil and Deb's presentations. Excuse me. The Premier account allows you to combine flexibility with the tax advantages of an international bond from a provider based in Ireland, along with a wide range of investment options, including a bespoke investment solution that we've just heard about, and also provides access to comprehensive segmentation from a trusted UK brand name. Okay. Okay, let's have a quick look at the original learning objectives that Neil originally set out, and I think we've now covered these. I hope you agree. And not surprisingly, we've had a few questions raised on the segregated portfolio service, which we can ask Deb to go through now. Okay, Deb. So the first one is why is this a relatively new concept if the legislation has been in place since 1999?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And the reason for that is that a third party investment manager is needed for this to work, because the key thing here is neither the advisor nor the client can influence the asset selection. So there has to be someone independent, i.e. a third party investment manager, who is managing the money. And it's only in the last few years that we have seen the rise of discretionary fund managers and more advisors outsourcing to discretionary fund managers. So that's the reason that this concept is relatively new. So say that this was something that we've been looking at and been able to offer going back to about 2014. But I suppose also in a way, it's become a popular alternative to bespoke life funds, which is where we also see the ability to buy equities, bonds and gilts, because it is the life fund itself that's the permissible asset.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Deb. Right, then the next one is how many segregated portfolio service agreements do you have in place?
Right, currently then the number of partners that we are working with is 18, although there are a couple of investment managers that we were also in talks with, ensuring that they are able to put the necessary compliance procedures in place. I'm not going to list all 18 fund managers, discretionary fund managers on the call, but there is a full list of all our SPS partners on the website, and then that's just for standard agreements, and then there's a separate section on the website where we also list all those with a segregated portfolio service agreement as well.
Lovely, thank you, Deb. Right, another one, will you consider adding additional SPS discretionary fund managers to your approved partner list?
Yes, as I mentioned, there are a couple that we are in talks with currently. But we don't expect to see SPS available to all our discretionary fund manager partners. As I think Neil mentioned earlier, we do have DFM agreements in place with into the hundreds of discretionary fund partners. But I don't see this being expanded to a great extent. And there are reasons for that. The first being that it has to be really carefully controlled. There are the compliance procedures are very, very important, and it's important that that discretionary fund manager can demonstrate that they're able to put those procedures in place. And indeed, some discretionary fund managers themselves actually don't want to be able to offer this. And so quite clearly, there has to be the appetite on both sides for that agreement to be put in place.
Lovely, thank you. Right, a couple more. Do you accept in specie transfers from an existing unwrapped investment with an SPS DFM partner?
That's another good question, and the answer to that is yes. This would be a carefully managed process. So we do put some caveats around that because we have to ensure that the client didn't have any influence over the stock selection that's being transferred, because if we're transferring assets in specie, quite clearly those assets had previously been bought, and we don't know the status of influence there. So we would be looking out for a couple of things there. So if there is one particular stock that would be accounting for more than a third of the overall assets that would are being transferred, that might be a bit of an alarm bell. But I think the key thing is that the investment manager is in full control of which assets or which stocks are actually being transferred. So yes, probably a little bit of a longer answer, but yes, we would accept in specie transfers. So if one of our existing SPS discretionary fund managers, a client has an unwrapped investment with them, and this it's now appropriate perhaps for this to be put into an international bond, perhaps for inheritance tax reasons or whatever other tax planning, yes, we could look at that in specie transfer without the stocks having to be sold. But that's probably a little bit of a lengthy answer, but it is a good question, and I would say this would be something if advisors have any clients where they're thinking this could be appropriate, that they would speak to their account managers in the first instance.
Lovely, thank you. Okay, two more. who should contact? Who should contact the SPS DFM if my client or I have a query about the performance of an investment which is managed by the SPS DFM?
Right. Okay. I think as I mentioned earlier, it is possible for the client and the advisor and the investment manager to still have meetings, because it's as we know, they're probably having contact with them anyway, because there's a chance that there could be an unwrapped investment. But the conversations must stick to the performance of that portfolio. And if there is a change to the risk profile, this can be communicated to the discretionary fund manager via us. So, yeah, in terms of that, if it was something outside of the meeting, I suppose the meeting that had been held, any correspondence can firstly be sent through us. But the expectation would be that the performance would be discussed anyway as part of the normal meeting that the client has.
Okay, great. Thank you, Debs. All right, last one. What would happen if an SPS mandate was no longer suitable for a client?
Right, okay. As SPS isn't a separate product, this is actually quite straightforward. So the portfolio can be switched to a standard DFM mandate, or indeed another type of investment at any time. So if it was no longer appropriate for that client to have an SPS mandate, there would be a form that could be submitted to us, so that could then, the assets would have to be obviously sold within the segregated portfolio mandate, certainly those that wouldn't be permissible in a standard mandate. So yeah, I think that's one of the beauties of the fact that this isn't a standalone product. It is purely an investment option. And I think I've said that earlier, that the only restriction is that the bond is either all SPS or none. So yes, what would happen if it's no longer suitable? That's fine. They could switch to a standard mandate. Yeah.
Lovely. Thank you very much for all those, Deb. So it's very much appreciated.
Okay.
Just whilst I go through the final housekeeping elements, I'll put a slide up just detailing the main benefits of the segregated portfolio service for you. So if you do have any clients where you feel an investment bond may offer the ideal solution, or if you have any further questions, please do contact your Canada's Life account manager or a member of our ICANN technical support team for further information. Just a reminder that our ICANN team can be contacted directly on 01707 422 999, or via the email on ICANN@canadslife.co.uk. And before we finish, just a reminder that CPD certificates will be emailed across within 48 hours, and a recording of the webinar will be online within 48 hours as well. Handouts can be downloaded from the control box on your screens. There will be a few yes and no questions for you to complete as you exit the webinar, and we'd really appreciate your feedback on this, please. We'll be switching off the audio now, but the chat box facility will remain open for a couple of minutes for any further questions you may have. Thank you again, and have a good afternoon.